When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Good morning, or afternoon, or is it evening? It's very difficult to keep track of time around here.
Who are you?
Your new keeper.
This is no keeper.
Oh, I know it's not exactly what you had in mind, but now I'm afraid you're rather stuck with
me. Paul to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
I give you a privileged insight into the mystery of time, and you criticize my logic.
No, I'm just saying that a lot of the time you don't really make sense.
As long as that's understood, you and I are going to get on splendidly.
Prepare for access to the source.
Here comes the drums!
Hello, and welcome to Paul to Open, a podcast entirely held together by people just being terribly nice to each other, which does make a change, and by going randomly through the entire show called Doctor Who. My name is Chris Taylor.
And I'm Pete Paschal, and Chris and I, we're a couple of guys, we're a couple of journalists, we've let you know that before, and we've covered many things, including Doctor Who, and we like to think of this podcast as our connection with the show,
the source
material, you might say.
That's right.
And as Chris alluded to just a moment ago, instilling harmony from that connection is really our sacred duty as your host. You might even call us keepers.
That's right.
Covenant.
We are brothers keepers and each other's keepers, and we keep each other on the straight and narrow, and we've kept ourselves going in some very interesting directions.
Have we? Wow.
We have.
Tell us where we've been previously on Pull to Open.
As your keeper, let me inform you that three stories ago we were on the moon with a bunch of chemistry sets and Cybermen with claws. And then we rocketed forward in time some centuries and into a distant star system for the Chris Chibnall joint 42. And then, because the randomizer apparently loves Chris Chibnall, it went back to one of his most influential stories from the classic series. One of those stories that most influenced him, The Brain of Morbius.
Mm.
A story about a crisis with a source of energy.
Yeah.
The Sisterhood of Khan. And then...
Interesting parallels we're making here. Nice connections already. I think Indeed. We could skip one of the questions later. Even.
we kind of almost, but there's more. Oh, there are more connections. Just you wait. And then what did the randomizer do? Well, we asked the randomizer last week for something that changes canon, I think was your request.
Yeah, or goes into it. Yes. You know, has something to say about canon.
Yes. When I say last week, by the way, I mean the order in which we recorded this. You may be listening to it in slightly timey-wimey order. Yeah. However, you wanted canon. I wanted exposed brain bits. You definitely got it. I sort of got it. But yes, we went to Season 18, Serial 6, The Keeper of Traken. That's right.
You betcha.
Penultimate Tom Baker story, and the reason why I'm wearing this fabulous scarf.
Nice. Yeah, this is a season we've done quite a few of now,
mm-hmm.
Season 18. We've done most of the East Base trilogy. We did a little story called Megloss, and I remember Legopolis was quite a while ago.
Yes.
But yeah, so we're filling in the blanks here.
there may be some connections. Season 18 is definitely a season with a certain feel to it. Even if it's not all scored by Paddy Kingsland, it's definitely there are connections. And what we're going to be talking about today is a story that is very Meglos-ish in some ways. Yeah. And definitely very Legopolis-ish, as it leads us directly into that regeneration story.
Yeah, there's a vibe. There's a vibe to season 18, and this definitely has a big chunk of vibing going on.
Thank you.
And guys,
right, yeah, that, season 18 is a vibe, man. A vibe.
Yeah, it's more vibe is kind of a 70s term, so we got to figure out the 80s term because it's very also 80s is another thing about it. Yeah, but if you enjoy vibing with the show, if you enjoy vibing with this podcast, hey, folks, I want to remind you, one of the best ways to vibe with the podcast is actually on YouTube, where you can see us. Hey, everyone, see our fun Easter eggs in the background. I got my Tom Baker poster, the Pirates poster from a recent episode of Doctor Who magazine. You can see that. You can be seeing that right now if you're not listening on YouTube. And if you are listening on YouTube, not only can you subscribe to the podcast, which we highly recommend, and you can also turn on a bell icon to get notifications whenever we have new content, you can also become a member. And members are, we call our members true companions of the podcast. So for just a little bit of gratzits from your pocket, $7.99, you can become a true companion. It really helps support the show, obviously, but it also will get you the podcast a day early. If you're a true companion, you will get the podcast on Fridays, not Saturdays. So you can enjoy being ahead of the game before your calcified compatriots can come alive and then listen to the podcast the next day.
That's right. Listen ahead of Milka and all evil. Be on the side of good. And yes, if you're contributing at the Viscount level, you could even pop up between us just out of nowhere, like the Keeper of Dragon does in this story. Just pop in, pop out, do the Irish goodbye, however you want to do it. We'll accommodate you Viscounts.
That's right. So if you ever are listening to the end of the show, hear where the randomizer is taking us next and thinking, oh man, I have so much to say about that story, join at the Viscount level and you can actually say your things on the podcast itself with us. Amazing.
Absolutely amazing, and we'll all be terribly nice to each other.
That's right.
But one segment of the show where we're not terribly nice to each other is about to commence.
It's time for the cruelty part of the show. That's correct. It is, of course, the Humoji Challenge.
Every week, look at the codex. Every week, I just don't have time.
That's right. It's the time of the show where I get to torture Chris by describing emojis which correspond to a Doctor Who title, and he must guess that title, that story title. It is a episode from the television run every time, and these are all user, reader, watcher, listener.
The watcher.
Contributed. The watcher, right? He's coming up quick.
We actually have a
new set of emojis from a longtime fan and supporter on Patreon. Hey. By the way, you can support the podcast on Patreon in addition to YouTube. We're at patreon.com/pulltoopen. But a longtime listener with the handle JC17Ace has given us some emojis. And I like these emojis because they're a little different style than some of the ones we've seen recently. Some of them have been quick and short, even though guessing them may not have been short. But these have a lot of emojis in them.
Oh, no.
So I'm excited to get to them.
Oh, it's one of those. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a few. We're going to go through them in the coming weeks. And here is the first one. Are you ready, sir?
Never. But I suppose that the time has come.
Okay, well, we're going for it. Here it is. First, I'll tell you how many emojis. It's 6 emojis, so
okay.
Need 2 hands. First emoji.
Yep.
It's the tragedy and comedy masks.
Okay.
Together. Second emoji, a king, essentially a prince, a guy with a crown.
Okay.
Next one, woman with a crown. Next one, an ant.
Oh god, that's out of left field.
Next one, a horse head. And the last one is man wearing a turban. So I will now put these in the chat because that was a lot of emojis and you might have forgotten about the first couple.
I was fairly confident with the drama faces. I'm like, okay, Shakespeare code.
It is not the Shakespeare code.
When I realized, yeah, there's not a lot of ants or horses, unless we're talking about a Wild Blue Yonder situation. And by the way, shout out to Dave Kitchen from the Doctor Who show for sympathizing with me on a previous emoji challenge, saying that he would not have got Wild Blue Yonder either. That was a pun based emoji. So unless we've got some pun based on ants and horses. Or unless this is like the web planet or something that I don't know the story of.
It is not the web planet, but you're getting warm.
Okay, so not the Shakespeare code, not the web planet. We've narrowed it down to roughly 290 stories that it could possibly be. But I mean, it's like, okay, wait, I'm getting warm with the web planet?
You are getting warm with the web planet.
Oh God, so it's probably a Hartnell that I just don't know anything about.
Probably. I will say you have guessed the Doctor now.
Oh, hey, yes, okay, it's Hartnell. And yeah, it's not any of the Hartnells that we've done. It's not a Hartnell that I've seen. It's not any of the historicals that we've yet to see, unless it is. Unless
I will say it is a partially missing episode. Partially missing story.
Okay. Partially missing. All right. And it's not the Crusade, and it's not... Is it the Crusade?
It's the Crusade!
There are ants in the Crusade?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I mean, it follows the web planet. So perhaps there are some ant references or something. I'll be honest. I've never seen the Crusade. I've never read the Crusade. I don't really know what happens other than some very basic plot summaries I've read. So there could be a little bit of after effects of the web planet in episode one.
There could be, yeah. Or maybe there's... it is a pure historical, of course, so there's no... alien species in it, but yeah, maybe a little known fact about the Crusades is Richard of Lionheart led a legion of ants
to
Jerusalem. Yeah,
we'll get there when we get there. But
we'll
folks,
check that.
First, I want to say thanks, JC17H. We'll get to your other emojis in the coming weeks. You too can be just like Ace, people. You can leave your emojis by either supporting on Patreon or easier and free. You can just leave a review in the Apple Podcasts app or whatever app you are using to listen to Pull to Open. So that's just right. Leave it there. You might want to leave a star rating too, which is nice.
Please,
we always like those.
Please leave a star rating. And if you're listening or watching on Spotify, then we don't want to leave you out. You have a way to contribute too. Pull from the bottom of the screen. That's right. It's Pull to Open. You can rate the story that we're discussing. You can rate The Keeper of Trakan right now as you're listening to this, if you like, and go back to the other episodes and leave your ratings for those stories. We are now going to read out some ratings for 42.
That's right.
Which, just as a reminder, previously on Pull to Open, Pete rated this one a Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
He liked it better than I did. I said it was a hybrid of The Lady Cassandra, which is paper thin plot but looks pretty with some moisturizing, and a Professor Hater. Which they tried something and we learned something and it didn't necessarily work. And I gotta say, I think the people agree with me, Pete.
I think you are edging out the Dalek here. So just so we're clear, the Dalek has a decent showing. It's basically about the same as the Lady Cassandra showing, but the winner clearly is the Professor Hater. Even though it's not a solid majority, it is definitely first past the post. So this has more Hater Cassandra energy than Dalek energy. And so, I can see all this. There's at least a little bit of the audience thinks it's an Ogron, by the way. Mm-hmm. And these are the only ones that that garnered votes. Nobody thought it was one of the best ever, which I think is absolutely true.
Right. Nobody said Fixed Point in Time.
That's right. So I think what we have here is people who liked the aesthetic and maybe gave a little more points to what they were trying to do, which was kind of a real-time story.
Yeah.
Thought it was a good episode of Doctor Who, but definitely not great. And others were like, you know, it's a little forgettable, and I can't quite bring myself to believe it's a good episode. But the points for trying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of the consensus, so I get it.
Yes, well, burn with me was the catchphrase that didn't really take off from 42. but thanks for burning with us. And hey, remember to use your burner phone to vote again on Spotify if you feel really strongly about something. We keep these polls open basically for the length of the lifetime of one Keeper of Dragon. That's a long, long time, people. Just look at his fingernails.
You know, last thing I'm going to say about 42, though, it just occurs to me, because it's happening sort of in this Tennant era, and he has a lot of these, like, he has a lot of good episodes, Tennant does. Like, if you look back on our ratings, he probably bats Viscount, Banger, and Dalek more than most Doctors. I think he's kind of graded on a curve, too, you know, when it's a Tennant adventure.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit, I'll just say this, because it did occur to me when I was thinking about rating this one, like it seems almost tailor-made for Cassandra or a raid hater, like, you know, our the way we express those ratings. But I'm also like, well, it was good though, you know what I mean? Like, I took it off the curve for, and at least according to me, right? Like, you knew it had a different rating, and I we both respect that, but it's like I didn't want to dock points to this story just because it's a Tennant story and he tends to hog a lot of good ratings.
All right, well, let's link things between season 3 of the new show, which is what contained 42, and also contained a master regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of the only two that we've seen on screen.
That's right.
And we're going to hightail it back to 1981 for the other, spoiler alert. Hmm. And
wasn't it 1980?
January 1981, when it was actually broadcast.
Keeper of Trocken. Oh, yes. Okay.
And you know why I know this? I'm going to give you a little more time here to prepare your deal.
Because you saw it when you were...
I saw it at the time. Not only that, I've just discovered, like literally before we came on air here, I went back to the very first diary that I ever wrote, which was in 1981, the very first month that I ever wrote a diary, and I did not find the first three episodes of Keeper of Trocken interesting enough to note in my diary. But the fourth one I saw at my friend Allison's party, her birthday party, and that was my first ever mention of Doctor Who in my diary.
Wow.
I had already, as we've mentioned in our previous Pull to Opens, I'd written a story based on Destiny of the Daleks, but it took this long to start writing a diary and mention seeing Doctor Who at the time in it. So
I love that at a kid's party in 1981, you guys watched Doctor Who. Because that's just what you would do, of course.
What you
can't miss it. Well, no one really even had a VCR back then, right? So it was like, you had to watch it live.
Well, even if you did have a VCR, as you did, the videotape itself was very expensive. So I would never have been allowed to tape Doctor Who. That would have been clamped down on. But yeah.
Totally makes sense.
All right. Well, what else makes sense, hopefully, is TLDW, Too Long to Watch,
boy.
Too Long Doctor Who, in which we have to summarize the show. We take turns. And
what's this we crap?
Yes, we. This week, it is you, sir, representing
That's
the
right.
Union, famous for its universal harmony. And we're not going to be terribly nice to you because we're going to give you just 30 seconds per episode, which means you have 2 minutes to summarize the incredibly knotty story, I think it's fair to say, of Keeper of Trocken. How are you feeling about this one? Did you practice?
I didn't practice, no, because it didn't help me last time. And even though I kind of knew this was happening, I didn't really do much prep at all. I've seen this story multiple times, so I have a good sense of what happens. But I agree, it's naughty and
naughty.
Not in the good way. So I will do my best at simplification. even though I might need to hand you the sonic screwdriver through the browser so you can open up
from the other side as I hand you the key to the cell at the same time. I get you. I've seen this a number of times too. I don't think I could have summarized it at all. I'm not even sure I think I could summarize it after watching it again. So
good luck
to you, sir.
Thank you.
And the official pull to open summary of The Keeper and Trocken in 2 minutes starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
So the Keeper of Trocken is this benefactor figure for the Trocken Union, and he's employing the Doctor essentially as a freelance do-gooder because he thinks there's this evil that's afoot in his on his planet on Trocken. And he's right, even though Trocken is this great place that is universal peace and harmony, that has this statue that has sort of landed, it's an evil person, but because it's so good there, it was always sort of turned to stone for the longest time, but now it's woken up and it's basically recruiting followers. And one of them is this sort of government person, Cassia, who's just married another government person. They're basically like ministers, and they that he starts corrupting her and getting her to manipulate things. So essentially, since the Keeper is dying, it's that he's reaching the end of his life, someone has to be the successor, and Melker, which is this thing, is trying to manipulate everything to make sure it's him. The Doctor and Adric arrive. They're promptly sort of thrown in jail, and Melker tries to get them in trouble and hurt them, and it starts slowly as Cassia gets stronger. And what happens is she eventually takes over the keepership, but Melker has figured out a way to sort of replace her with him. He gets sort of beamed in when the Keeper dies and is now the Keeper. And the Doctor and Adric, and now they're one of the person, this guy, this Minister Tremes's daughter, Nyssa, they all try to work together to sabotage the power source to this place so that he gets kicked out. But then basically the Doctor gets pulled into Melker, which turns out to be the Master's TARDIS. And the Master's actually behind all this, and he wants the power of the keepership. So they sabotage the source, and the Master has to run away, and some other minister becomes the Keeper, and the Doctor and Adric take off because they've just sort of narrowly saved stuff, even though Cassia is now dead. But what happens is the Master's still there, and he absorbs Tremes's body before he leaves and sort of regenerates with the power of the Keepership.
Wow! You got it. You got it right there. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I really had to just skip a lot of stuff.
Take a breath. I felt that one. And I like the strategy, because usually we start with, we think we're very clever when we're starting the TLDWs. We're like, oh yeah, let's start with the scene, like, you know. But you didn't. You didn't start with the opening scene of the Doctor and Adric and the Keeper of Trocken, who just appears in the TARDIS.
Right.
We should say. And just decides to show the Doctor and Adric his wedding video.
Well, not his wedding video.
The wedding video of Tremes and Cassia. By the way, they were consuls, which is the word you were looking for.
I was going to say consul, but I don't know if anyone knows. Like, what does that even mean? It's basically a government minister is who they are, right? They're basically senators or something.
It means you have privilege, apparently, and it means that your daughter can just go around bribing guards whenever she feels like it.
Yeah, let's talk about, like, we can do big picture on the story, but I honestly really want to go big picture on Trocken.
Yeah,
It's a weird, but somehow comprehensible thing. Okay, there's a number of things they tell us about Trocken, right? Mm-hmm. And one is that it has a reputation. The Keeper is actually really surprised when he comes in the TARDIS and realizes Adric doesn't know what it is. So if you're, you know, spacefaring, I guess, and you know about galactic empires and planets, you might, oh, Trocken, yeah, that's the place where everybody's super nice and the Keeper keeps evil out, right? That place? Yeah everyone knows that.
Never heard of Trocken? You'd think it would have come up at some point in the Doctor's Adventures. And maybe it has, because it's also interesting that I don't know if we've had before in the show a story where the Doctor is so ambiguous about, like, did I visit this place before? Basically, he's got buffer over and he can't remember everywhere he's been. And he goes through these logs. And he goes through his written logs. First of all, I love that he's just resolutely analog.
Yeah. this is like a Totally. A couple stories after he was doing punch cards in the console.
Yes. Yeah. And the giant CVS receipt from the console from State of Decay. I'll never forget that. So he's got these giant old books with bad handwriting that Adric says is marvelous. He doesn't know if he's been there, but he also thinks that he probably hasn't because it sounds a bit boring. It sounds a bit perfect. It sounds a bit utopian. Mm-hmm. You know, evil is kept out. Perhaps that's why I've never been there, he says.
Right, exactly. But it's funny because this story seems to imply that the Trakan Union is a lot less perfect than you might think. Because even though it has this big reputation of being very peaceful and harmonious, it has, for starters, fosters that are very easily bribed. They have weapons that are pretty, you know, they don't use them much, but it's like, oh, we should arm the fosters, implying, well, they clearly have armaments ready to be used.
Yeah. And have a museum of armaments, basically.
And then once they are armed, there's a lot of casual execution either happening or called for, right? There's a lot of like, kill them. Yeah. They're free. It's a little, that got extreme really quickly. I mean, that's...
It's not a constitutional democracy. It's fair to say that. We do get the sense that there are people out there. And in fact, Cassia does actually stand up and say that she's talking for them at one point and mentions that crops are failing. But they don't really care there in the consul's chambers. And in fact,
very elitist.
I showed this to my newbie friend, a Doctor Who newbie who likes the show but is coming to this all new. And basically, they identified this story as the drama nerds versus the science nerds.
Okay,
it's really what it is. Like, once you see Keeper of Trakan that way, you can't see it any other way. Basically, you've got two couples who are sort of really into each other. Because they're all sciencey and stuff. Those couples are Adric and Nyssa, who seem to speak to each other in the language of Science Fair Project. That is their language of love.
And then the Doctor and Tremus, right? The
Doctor and Tremus, who, like, there's a bit of chemistry between them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's, the science cop buddy show going on there,
Definitely some intense friendship going on there, some fast friendship.
Well, yeah, and I literally like the scene, Ainley, and so Anthony Ainley, obviously this is his first outing in Doctor Who, not as the Master. He is playing an entirely different character called Tremus, which is an anagram of Master, which we could touch on that really quickly, like why? And obviously we know why, they're sort of hinting at what happens later, but to make it part of the story, you know...
The
one what?
Three letters for you, JNT.
Yeah.
John Nathan Turner and Chris Bidmy, the script editor, didn't think it made sense. He didn't.
It doesn't make sense. And the only thing that it might open up is some fun headcanon much later now, right? Where you can sort of think of any number of storylines where the Master went back to Trakan well before this and sort of seeded the idea in his decayed Master self of maybe taking over Tremus later by naming him Tremus. Yes. Like maybe that was the idea.
Note to self. I love that idea. Yeah.
So anyway, putting that aside, the whole thing with the science nerds versus the drama nerds, I really like that framing.
Yeah.
I actually hadn't heard that before.
It's so perfect as we're talking about the system of whatever system governs Trakan, right? Because that's all we actually see on the government side is a bunch of these consuls sitting in a room being really dramatic with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they're pulling out rings and they're actually one. Yeah, they're mostly like they're fairly colorful guest stars in Doctor Who. And I forget their names now. Like it's Soren, I think.
Yes.
Is the guy who ends up getting killed, who's the presumed successor to the keepership, I think everyone is. So when he's dead, it sort of comes down to Cassia or Tremus because there's that other woman who insists she's too old. And then there's the guy who actually ends up being the keeper at the end, who's just every line is like, what's going on? I'm clearly the dunce of the council. I was purely elected on my good looks. You know, yes, he's like the Dan Quayle of this whole freaking trucking union. And he just sort of ends up, you know, the keeper anyway, because, you know, there's nobody else who can take the job.
I love him. He's sort of the unsung hero of Keeper of Trucking. His name is Luvik. He's played by Robin Sloane's. His catty female companion that he's in almost every scene in is Keturah. And I love the bit where they come in at the end. You didn't really mention that we've got the wind machine going.
Yeah, sort of all over the place
as they try to activate the source or mess with the source so that Melkor can be destroyed. But they just come in right there at the end. Keturah and Luvik, for like no reason, they just enter the truck and throne room. They're like, oh no, oh, we just walked in the door and now we're getting pushed.
And then we got to hang on to something.
And they're just, it's really bad. But yeah, but Luvik is sort of the stand-in for the audience. And I love that he says this twice in an early scene that's sort of full of truck and techno babble. He just says, I don't understand. I don't understand.
I just understand what's going on.
Yeah, what's going on here? I don't get it. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you. This is what every Doctor Who scene with techno babble needs.
Well, this is why he's the perfect keeper. He's a populist. It's like, just get him in there. So back to the drama nerds bit. I really like that framing again, because I think this is a drama, right? It's actually a Shakespearean drama, very much so. And it's all kind of very obviously, right? There's things happening in throne rooms and antechambers. Everyone's dressed in robes. The dialogue is very stagey. Now, that's not unusual for Doctor Who, but this sort of goes double, right? And there's just so much sort of betrayal, things happening in alcoves and, you know, extra characters that are have outsized roles because of this corruption, like Newman. I think I'm falling back on some Seinfeldian pronunciation. No,
he is actually Newman. Yes,
Newman.
He's the corruptible Foster.
Yeah, which you always need in like a Shakespeare play, right? Yes. I mean, there's always someone like that. So, so it's a good feel. And the thing is, what I'm saying, I guess, is sort of for most of this story, the drama nerds win the day, because it's like while the Doctor and Tremis and Adric and whoever are sort of messing around with their gadgets, it's like they're actually making decisions. And there's like that stuff in episode 3 where Cassia becomes the essentially the keeper designate.
Yes,
and she, you know, they're color. Yeah,
given to by Melkor.
Exactly. Which is like, you kind of wonder, like, why hasn't someone earlier noticing this? You know what I mean? It seems so obvious she's the bad guy. This is like, I watched this with my kids and they were all like, particularly sort of towards the middle of the show where they're capturing the Doctor again in the Grove.
Yeah.
And there's this guy with the net gun or whatever it is, and the net's electrified and they're all down. And she walks right up to Melkor and is like, all right, we're kicking ass here. You know, we're totally taking over. And the guy's right there. are you not noticing she's worshiping the evil statue thing?
Yeah.
Aren't you going to say anything?
Too distracted by that rope, perhaps. I think it's supposed to knock them out. But
Well, no, I meant the guy with the net gun. He was right there.
Oh, he was right there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he's just obeying orders.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Like, again, I think you have to rationalize just to sort of link that to what I was saying earlier about Trakan being this corruptible place. That's the word I would use. It's corruptible, even though it's peaceful. You kind of have to headcanon this a little. And a lot of this is implied. So I don't think it's an entirely like headcanon thing, which is that the keeper's dying. So number one, it's chaos. It doesn't happen that often. This happens, I think, every 1,000 years or something. So it's like they're totally unprepared for this, not just in terms of who's the keeper, but what the reverberations that are enabling Melkor / the master to get its foot in the door. No one knows what to do about it, even though we don't even have cops here, really, you know, like, and the guns are dusty and they're in a closet. And, you know, it's the whole old saying of the only thing evil needs is for good people to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's their default here in Track. And they're just like, we're just going to do nothing. And, Melkor's taking over. Oh, I guess he's in charge now. Great.
They are so far removed from the people, you can't really have any sympathy from them. And people are just, they're treated as extras. Well, they literally are extras in just a few scenes. But they're just like, oh yeah, they, you know, we learn briefly that the crops have failed. Well, that should be a major thing that the consul should be talking about. And then the people just sort of develop this superstition that Melkor is going to make everything cool again.
Right.
You know, that he's basically...
make Traken great again?
Yes.
The Mata?
Yes.
The Maka? Maka. The Maka crown.
Yeah, which is kind of what this is.
Mata.
Yeah.
Traken's under the sea. Sorry, I was focusing on the cave for some reason. Mata. The Mata crown.
You know, Melkor does sound a little bit like Maka, so I think that's, you know, we can sort of take that as red if you're wearing a big red Melkor hat. Then that's basically what this is at. But yeah, there's, you know, those drama elites just sitting in their councils, and there's just really no sense of scale here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big part of the problem with, I think Keeper of Traken suffers from a believability problem, from a suspension of disbelief problem. There are just too many things to overcome here with the suspension of disbelief. If you're watching it as an adult.
Yeah. And I would say, well, even for the time, I think one of the things they were unable to overcome was the budget. I feel like some of the special effects are really kind of like, even for Doctor Who, they kind of take you out of the story. So one is that sort of jarring moment the first time you see Cassia's eyes taken over by Melkor, and they're so obviously just painted on her eyelids or something. Like, so, and it's just too bad that they couldn't figure out some way to keep her eyes. I think even by this point, 1981, you know, you could have put on contact lenses that could glow a little. I mean, you know, this is right around the same time the Incredible Hulk was a thing. And that was that looked comparatively great. You know, you had Bill Bixby pop in the green contact lenses, and it was like you knew what was happening, right? It was very cool and eerie. And the actress just couldn't handle contacts for some reason. I don't know. Or maybe they literally just couldn't do it in time. Even and it was like, well, who's buying the contacts? We don't have them. Okay. Paint her eyelids, I guess.
You didn't even need the eyes. I mean, the collar was glowing. The collar was supposed to be the thing that controls her. The collar was actually one of the original inspirations. The writer, Johnny Byrne, who was noted this Irish legend, I think it is, of a judge who was so incorruptible that if he ever made an unjust decision, his collar would strangle him. So Colin is a really important influence here. You don't need the eyes. You know what else you don't need? You don't need Sarah Sutton to sit in hair and makeup for like an hour at the start of every day to curl her hair, which is what they did here for her as Nyssa, because every woman on Traken has curly hair. I don't know if you noticed that.
Didn't really.
If it was
so, the men have straight hair, shoulder length, and the women all have curly hair. Got it.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's, you know, sort of an example of like the weird Doctor Who continuity behind the scenes. But anyway, that's just to say they didn't need the eyes. But to go back to this drama versus science nerd thing, I think it's very, very productive to talk about, because also Tremus kind of starts off as a drama nerd, right? You know, he's giving big speech at his wedding about, well, first of all, he's a little bit drunk. He's had a little bit too much wine. He's
very happy to be hammered.
Yeah. And he's another connection perhaps with Brain of Morbius, which is a little wine heavy. and then he comes out of his wedding where you got to say that is not a banger of a party that they're leaving, you know, two by two early. But he comes out and gives this big speech about how he couldn't be happier with Cassia if he, you know, if the stars were all coins and the sky was a purse in his fist. Like he's getting really drama with it. Like, and that's why he likes
Cassia. Man.
Then the doctor comes along. He does not have eyes for Cassia at all. He could care less about his wife who has turned to evil and then dies and doesn't get mentioned again. He's all about the doctor. He's all about this science friend. He's no longer a drama nerd.
Yeah, Cassia gets a big short shrift both from Tremus and the script, really. I mean, you know, you don't really get a sense of her. I mean, she's the performer's great, but I do think it's unclear how much she has her own agency and how much she's being manipulated by the master. And you have to fill in, she must be manipulated by the master on some level, because at some point, it just, she's gone so far with it, it just doesn't make any sense. Because her whole motivation early seems to be like, I don't want Tremis to be the keeper. I've just married the guy. I want to have a life with him.
Yeah.
So let's work with Melkor to make sure that doesn't happen. And even if Melkor ends up being the keeper, he's my bro. So, you know, we're fine, whatever his plans are. That's like, seems to be her logic, if there is any to it. But then once she is forced to become the keeper so that Melkor can take over, she seems to resign herself to that pretty quickly. Now, at this point, of course, she's been manipulated. She's getting deep. And she also has the collar. And he's just given her like the first pain, you know, agony injection or whatever to ensure her obedience.
Yeah.
So at this point, you just kind of feel like her character has disappeared and now she's just this vessel. And that's all they treat her as anymore. Like, you know, like basically Tremis at the end is high-fiving the doctor and he's like, oh, was my wife killed in all this? I don't even remember.
Nobody mentions her. You know what else? Who else nobody mentions? Tremis's first wife.
Right. Blinking, you miss it. This is like, she's the wicked stepmother for Nyssa, right? Because my kids were a little confused, but in that scene in the grove where she discovers Nyssa and is really mean to her, which is some of the most Shakespearean dialogue in the whole thing, I'll say, is like, they're like, what is it? Isn't that your daughter? And I was like, no, like, she's the stepmom.
They wicked stepmom. Fall for the same guy.
Yeah,
the guy is—he's tall. He's—you could say he's chiseled. Melkor, yeah. I mean, he almost chiseled. Seems to be,
okay, I just got that.
Yeah.
Speaking of dad jokes, we got to get to one in a minute.
But he also kind of looks like he's posing on Muscle Beach. Like he's got this kind of like, he looks like he's in a
chest
swimsuit
out.
And he's doing a kind of hands on hips kind of pose. And I gotta say, he does get the ladies. Does Melkor. He gets, you know, both Cassia and Nyssa kind of fall for it. They kind of have this little cat fight over him.
Yeah, a little bit. Always bringing him flowers. Yeah. And Cassia wanted to be alone with him. So she banished the Fosters from the grove.
You know what? I think it's because he's such a good listener. I think that's why he gets the babes. He doesn't say anything until, like, he just kind of echoes Cassia.
Until he's... Since it's happening soon, that's a little, you know, it's funny. I got a little echoey in reverse of the snowmen there was the whole bit where Simeon is talking to the snow and the snow talks back at him. And, but here, obviously, Melkor is secretly the master, and we should unpack this a little bit, a lot.
First of all, can you sort out for me the question of, is Melkor itself the TARDIS? Because
let's talk about it, right? So, okay. So we should note on a sort of meta level that the writer, Johnny Byrne, submitted the script without the master.
Yes.
And then, of course, while he was on vacation in Greece and unreachable, John Nathan Turner was like, you know what we got to do? We got to bring back the master. It's going in this story. And it was left to Chris Bidmead, the script editor, to figure it out. And I think they ran it by Johnny Byrne when he came back, and it was like, they were all good. But so he's kind of shoehorned into this story. I do think it works. I do like it. I think it's handled well at times and mishandled at times. Yeah. So I'll come back to that. But getting to the TARDIS point, I think there's a strong case to be made for two interpretations here. One, that the master arrives, whatever it was, 30 years ago in his TARDIS, landing, and then is sort of calcified, but he's planning, he's this long-term plan to take over the keepership. The other possibility is that there was a real Melkor that lands, and the master just materialized his TARDIS around it. Right. And so he wasn't there that long. Because, again, if he's this decaying master, and it's supposedly the same decaying master as we saw in The Deadly Assassin, his time should be pretty
less decayed.
We could get to that. That's, again, another example of the bad effects and makeup. Yeah. But you think he didn't have 20, 30 years to wait for Cassia to grow up and the keepership to die if he was this decaying person, right? So I tend to favor like his TARDIS materialized around a real Melkor, and he was just sort of in Melkor shape. But he clearly turned it into a robot of some kind, right? Because it's kind of like walking around with eye beams. Like, yeah, I would love to see more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It shoots and, little red 1980s pixels out of his eyes, but apparently if you just don't look at it, you're fine.
Well, here's my headcanon here on this, right? And it's a little bit of new who I'm incorporating into this. Like, I'm already throwing a lot of headcanon at this, but I'm also going to throw in one more. It's that the grandfather clock at the end is the TARDIS. We obviously implied to be the TARDIS from earlier, the Deadly Assassin.
Yep.
The Melker is actually an entirely different TARDIS, I think. And I think this is a battle TARDIS. You know, we've heard about battle TARDISes in the Time War. So it's got like weapon systems and stuff. So I think the Master somehow engineered some way to steal that, or maybe Goth supplied him with one way back and he just never used it. So he uses this other TARDIS to do the Melker stuff because he needs something more sophisticated to get to pull off that plan, and loses it in this episode, right? So
yeah, but there is a, so he has the grandfather clock inside the Melker control room at some
point. Yeah. I think so.
Again,
well, exactly, right? So he's kind of this expert at like TARDIS inside TARDIS and materializing around things, which he'd have to be, right? Because he's a bad guy. And this is, it's always like these plots he has.
He definitely does that in the next story, right? And like, oh, yeah, it's all about TARDISes materializing around TARDISes. But yeah, I'm also confused as to why he kept it as the grandfather clock when that is obviously out of place on Traken. But we know that his TARDIS can do the chameleon circuit. We know that from Legopolis. So, yeah, it's just, you're going to need to headcanon a lot.
You could, again, it's not too hard to headcanon, but it also doesn't make a lot of sense that Tremis is like, I'm going to stay to check on the clock and not say what he's doing. You know, in other words, like maybe he wants it as the clock so that it looks unusual and Tremis gets trapped because he has to touch it or whatever. But then why not just tell Nyssa that? Like, why tell her to run along if, like, hold on, I just want to check out this clock for a second, you know, which it seems to be what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's so weird. I mean, there are so many things, and I kind of want to go through some rapid fire stuff here.
Go for it.
Just to get all my thoughts and little trivia notes out of the way. First of all, Sarah Sutton, Manic Pixie Dream Princess, I think is the best way to describe how she comes across here. And apparently the rest of the cast called her the fairy because of that costume of hers. But it's a pretty cool costume.
Well, yeah, that's the design of this episode, even though the budget doesn't seem all that great, the design is really, really good, particularly her costume and a lot of the Trachonite costumes. And I would just say, Sarah Sutton is great. Like, I could definitely see why, like, oh, bring her back. Like, she's not in a lot of scenes, but she's pretty fun in the bit where she gets to shoot the Fosters, but try to bribe them first, but it doesn't work. And then she's like, all right, I've got plan B right here. And, you know, I gave her a lot of credit in Arc of Infinity, and I was like, almost missed, like, it's such an echo, right? He's just like casually zapping people with her stun weapons. I mean, way to go. She's like six gun Nyssa.
Really? It seems so un-Nyssa and so un-Sarah Sutton. Sarah Sutton, before this, her major acting credits were she played Alice in a BBC adaptation of Through the Looking Glass, and she played Roo from Winnie the Pooh in a famous stage production that went for many years. She was a child actor. So, yeah. I'm not sure either of those prepare you for the role of Nyssa or prepare you to hold an energy beam.
Well, whole thing with Nyssa is she has that childlike innocence for most of her run. And what I think they learn here pretty quickly is like, oh yeah, put Nyssa in danger because we care about her. And because when you put Adric in danger, who gives a crap? Like, you know, that's the thing. Oh, it's like, Adric. Poor Adric. I mean, in this one, I think they've got this sort of banter between him and Tom Baker, kind of down in episode one. The thing is, it's all skewed to Baker. And you almost get the sense that Johnny Byrne is almost writing at the behest of Baker here, where he gets to be fun and clever. Adric, yeah, he maybe asks a pointed question or two, but he's mostly put in his place by the doctor throughout episode one. The doctor is essentially telling him to shut up and like know that you're a naive, inexperienced kid. And every line seems to emphasize that to the point where he does shut up. There's long stretches in the rest of the story where Adric doesn't have a line.
Yeah, it's amazing that Adric is almost kind of relatable here. I think his best line is actually when he notices, he talks about the doctor's handwriting. in those time logs. And he just, you know, the Doctor kind of barks at him. What about my handwriting? It's marvelous. it's wonderful. Also, Adric, what else did I want to say about them? Yeah, Terrence Dix is mean to him. So I read the novelization of this as well, or listened to the audiobook. By the way, shout out to Jeffrey Beavers, who played the Master, who reads the audiobook.
Great voice.
Great voice, makes this way better than it has any right to be. But mm-hmm. Terrence Dix, in the novelization, we have a scene with the breakfast that the Doctor is promised by Tremus.
Right. He demands by Tremus. He's like, you know what I want, Tremus? Breakfast. Okay, yeah. Come on over. I'll make you some bacon and eggs.
Yeah. Terrence Dix gets into specifics about it being whole wheat bread and a fruit cordial to drink. And some actual fruit, and a little bit too many carbs there, Terrence Dix. But he also says that Adric ate enough for two. Now, if we remember Black Orchid...
he's a grown boy.
He's a grown boy. But, like, I don't know if that was a Black Orchid reference, because, of course, ever since then, Adric has kind of been reputed as kind of a bit of a glutton.
Yes, but it's also... He's a young man. I mean, come on. He needs to eat. And he also, like, I maybe it was just me, but when I was a young man, I probably ate twice as much as a lot of other people. Hmm. And now you could headcanon this too, if I really wanted to, because he's Alzurian and he has that rapid cellular adaptation or whatever they talked about there. And he heals really quickly. It's kind of like the Flash, right? You know, you got to eat a lot and, then you can do the super speed. So we could give him that excuse.
I'm surprised that Terrence Dix didn't notice the one thing that really struck me about Tremus's place and incorporated this into the breakfast scene. He has aubergines, just hanging around on the table that they use to sort of, you know, when they have the plan of how the source works and they're being held. It's being held.
Oh, yeah. The big scroll, he's holding it out. Yeah.
Being held open by two eggplants. Like,
okay.
What is it, Tremus? Like, are those the only crops that aren't failing on Trakan? Eggplants? And you just.
Well, at least they're not eggplant emojis, which could have taken this into a really weird place.
Yeah, there you go, folks. When you do your emoji review of Keeper of Trakan, definitely include some eggplant.
So, yeah, I'm glad we mentioned Jeffrey Beavers. I thought he did a great job as Melker's voice. He has sort of an air about his lines. They only modulated a little bit. So I think that's fine. It's really too bad. Like, I will say the big Master reveal, and it happens a couple times. Like, it happens to the audience, and then it happens to the Doctor. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are really underwhelming. I think it's a little too dramatic where he sort of turns in the chair and almost talks to the camera. And that struck me as sort of cheesy and unnecessary. And I think you want that confirmation, but make them wait until episode 4, because I've seen this a number of times, but I do remember the first time I watched it, the moment where Melker dematerializes the first time and you have that sort of second, it's really just half a second of the TARDIS noise that gets you as a Doctor Who fan, if you don't know the story, to really sit up and go like, wait a minute, what? And then you're like, could it be? And then they have sort of this big reveal for no reason. It's like, oh, it is. Well, thanks for telling me. and then there was, there could have been a whole week of like, I think it's the Master. You know what I mean? Like on schoolyards everywhere, you would think.
Well, you could still have had that. And maybe even I had that, because he doesn't actually look all that much like the Ruined Master. Deadly Assassin, that the mask had just completely fallen to pieces. You can see that he's wearing gloves, by the way. It's an unfortunate Megloss like moment for his ruined arms. But you could sort of get away with that whole, you know, not knowing after season 3. And the Radio Times still just listed him as Melker in the 4th episode as well. So the cat was not really officially out of the bag. We should also mention the reason why the Master came back is that JNT could not get Sarah Jane Smith or Leela to come back for the final season. Those were his plans, was that, you know, he really had to figure out how to shepherd the regeneration, because it'd been 7 years since the Doctor regenerates. The audience needed sort of hand-holding through it.
His plan was
originally, let's have Sarah Jane, let's have Liz Sladen back. And Liz Sladen says no. And then Louise Jameson was almost going to say yes for Leela, but then he said, oh, hey, why didn't you come back for the whole season? And she's like, oh, right. with Tom? Oh, no, thanks.
Those were her exact words.
Yeah. Let me check my schedule. I'll get back to you.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a tough answer to a question. But you know what? There are some other questions that we need to answer. And those are, of course, the four questions to Doomsday. First question, why did the randomizer take us here?
So many reasons. I'm going to give you the most obscure first. You know, Pete, and you know, Pull to Open listeners, I've been on a bit of a Beatles kick. We've been on a bit of a Beatles kick. Mm. We had The Chase. We had another Beatles reference.
Well, it's in Cheech and Ruby Road. It's the trailer for the season one.
That's right. And then it was also in, wasn't there a Beatles reference that we came across recently? In 42, there was the Beatles versus Elvis.
And if you think all the way back to the Three Doctors, there was a Beatles reference there.
That's right. The I'm the Walrus reference. And Johnny Byrne, the writer of this, when he came down to London in the early 60s, he once lived in the same house as the Beatles.
How about that?
Yeah.
Go so Johnny.
Beatles connection. It's also another energy crisis, like we had on Khan.
Arguably 42.
Yes. Very arguably 42. And we have a bunch of bingos that we haven't mentioned. We have Jeffrey Beaver's bingo, because he was also in Ambassadors of Death. Of course, he was Caroline Smith's husband.
Caroline John.
Caroline John, yes. John Smith. Yeah, I see where
you're an item.
We have Ruined Master bingo, because we did Deadly Assassin. We have Master On-Screen Regeneration bingo, unless you count Power of the Doctor.
Right, which I don't think we should.
Right. And we have Doctor and Adric as a TARDIS team bingo, because we also have Legopolis.
Oh, that's right. So prior to them, I got you, because there's only the two stories, really.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, good bingos. I want to see your filing cabinet full of these cards. It must be pretty big.
It's a giant 500-year diary of a time log.
Marvelous. Marvelous. This was almost too obvious that I almost missed it. So obviously I asked for something that messes with canon a bit. I think we got it here. But the connection to Brain of Morbius is so clear. I mean, they're both villains. They both have villains whose time is up, and are basically trying to get an artificial extension by stealing the Doctor's body in one. And here's the thing. They both succeed, but not with the Doctor's body. They both fall back to a plan B. And of course, the plan B here is taking over Tremis, which I will say, as much as it's weird, was amazing. Like, certainly the first time I watched it, I was like, holy cow, he can do that? And it led to so much debate between my brother and I about, can Time Lord do that? Or what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it's sort of explained in Legopolis that it's not just that he's a Time Lord, it's that he has some lingering power of the Keepership, and that enabled him to take over someone's body. But presumably that he couldn't do that anymore, because then he leads to a lot of I need to renew myself episodes.
Right. And you, we mentioned briefly Power of the Doctor. Did you notice that the Master regenerates with his clothes? New clothes appear, just as tenants change in in the transition from 13 to 14. In at the end of Power of the Doctor, the clothes change with the regeneration, and Tremis's clothes change, and his hair changes.
It's weird, right? Because it's like it's kind of like Tremis's outfit, but not.
Yeah.
it's like a mix between Tremis's outfit and arguably like a lot of the outfits the Roger Delgado Master had on, just kind of more formal suit, like black, etc. So, Okay. And he goes, regenerating the clothes. It starts here. Well, it doesn't really start here.
Yeah, and maybe also that's the reason why Anthony Ainley is so Shakespearean as the master, is that Dreamus was kind of the drama nerd as well.
Moving on to the second question. What if the evil plot had succeeded? All right. So the evil plot, obviously Melkers slash the Masters. How would it succeed? I think pretty easily you could write it so that the Doctor just doesn't get the code in time, or for whatever reason, the little Lego set that Adric hooked up to the source doesn't work. So Master gets full control of the source. He enslaves the Union. He turns it into some kind of version of, you know, kind of what we saw in The Last of the Time Lords, where he's militarizing it, creating his own little empire.
Right.
He's applying Time Lord technology to it. And he's, you know, going to use this as a springboard to take over the entire cosmos. Right. The question is, what happens to the Doctor, which I think you have to presume he just takes over the body and
he takes over the body. Doctor. And here's our other connection to Brain of Morbius, right? Because that was the evil plot succeeding with the Brain of Morbius, as Morbius takes over the Doctor. By the way, there's a randomizer connection and a half. Time Lord secreted on a hidden planet, on a planet that you wouldn't expect to find an evil Time Lord on. They're just all over the universe, apparently.
sprinkled a light dusting of evil Time Lords all over the cosmos. It happens.
The interesting thing is that if that happens, or even if the Master does get control of the Trakan Union and starts his conquest from there without taking over the Doctor's body, I think both of those ways you can kind of see Legopolis unfolding the same way. Pretty much. Like, either if the Master is the Doctor, then, you know, the Watcher can still set things right at the regeneration. He can prepare for the moment.
Oh, nice.
He's kind of your fail-safe there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. If the Master's off setting up his, galactic conquest from the basis of the Trakan Union, maybe the first planet he goes to is Legopolis. Because, you know, why wouldn't you want to control the mathematical structure of the universe. So he and the Doctor can have their showdown there regardless.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the Master being a little smarter than just, I've got a bunch of stuff. That he's more strategic about it, that he's like, okay, if I did get some stuff, here's my 1, 2, 3 of the places I would conquer. And here's my double secret plan for making sure the Time Lords don't mess with me.
Right.
Because you need to think about those things if you're just going to take everything over.
Right. I've got to make sure that Morbius doesn't mess with me if his followers ever rise in their millions.
Yeah. Cool. All righty. Let's move on to the third question, which, of course, is, where is the Clara Splinter? By Oswald, of course, Splinter to Time at the end of the name of the Doctor. She's somewhere in every single Doctor Who story. Where is she in The Keeper of Trakan?
Well, I had some ideas, but one has just occurred to me as we're talking about this. I think she is Tremus's first wife.
I like that. Yeah.
Because you've got to figure. So, according to this has only been mentioned in non-TV stuff twice. There were two novels that talk about Nyssa's history, and they contradict each other. In one, her mother dies in childbirth, and in another, her mother dies when she's young. So we've really got a Princess Leia, Queen Amidala kind of situation here.
Right.
If you're familiar with the problem of canon at the end of in Return of the Jedi, where Leia actually remembers her mother. Sorry, that's going really nerdy there. But yeah, I think so. You've got to explain the fact that Tremus's first wife died in childbirth, or just died at all, because it's not very common on Trakan, right? The one person that we see dying, the old dude who gets too close to Melka, although that happens off screen, like they have this whole discussion of like, oh, he was advanced in years. It does actually happen sometime. So a woman dying in childbirth would be almost unheard of. So I think that's Clara, and I think she's setting things up so that Tremus will, she makes friends with Cassia, and she's like, you should marry this girl because I want you to be happy afterwards. So that explains why he marries her, even though he doesn't even really seem to be into her.
Not bad. I actually love that. Love that Nyssa is Clara's daughter.
Ooh, right. Yes. Yeah. That does. Yeah, I could see that, right? Especially now we know she has straight hair.
Yeah. I can't do much better than that. All I could think of was that she's sort of laying the groundwork on Trakan so that it's more easily corruptible. So even though this sort of borders on what I don't like to do with Clara Splinters, which is like have them be kind of bad, even though it advances the plot, I do think she might have some knowledge on, or just even a philosophical standpoint, that Trakan needs to go as low as it can be before it can ascend to its highest point or something like that. So maybe she's sort of bribing the Fosters a little bit, you know, asking them for favors, or, you know, not those kind of favors, but the, you know, figuring things out so that where she can here and there prep the union for this moment where it will enable the Doctor to save everything.
Yeah. She's maybe establishing the corruptibility of the Fosters. Yes. I just got to say, AFAC, all Fosters are corruptible.
Maybe you could combine both of those. Maybe she could be doing that from the station of her being the first wife of Tremis. So.
That's right. Yeah, maybe she started the cult of Melkor as well, spreading the word that he's going to fix those broken crops. if he comes back in any way.
Yeah, maybe she writes reviews of Melkor for the local Trakan paper. Sort of the counterpoint. Yeah, Melkor's actually pretty cool. Let's give him a break.
Yeah, exactly. Just got moss all over him. Yeah. He's totally ripped. He really is.
Okay, moving on to the final question, the ultimate question, the only question that matters for the Keeper of Trakan. What did we think of this story? The Pull to Open rating system has 6 ratings. There's the Dalek, which we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which we give to an irredeemably bad episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hater, which is a not-so-good episode, but hey, at least they tried something. The Viscount Banger, which we reserve for the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, which we give to stories that have a high nostalgia quotient usually, which puts them in a status beyond rating. And the Lady Cassandra, which is a paper-thin plot, but hey, at least it looks good, especially with some moisturizing.
All right. Well, you go first, because I've got a bit of a controversial rating on this one.
Well, I'm calling this one a Dalek, although it's kind of an awkward Dalek. It starts off strong. Mm. It's got, I think, some really good ideas and good design, but it really wobbles, like I would say, right when Melkor gets what he wants. And then they kind of, it's like the dog that catches the car, you know, like, hold on, now we have it. How do we get out of this? And all they can think of is some technobabble that both the Doctor and Adric do. And, you know, there's the reveal of the Master, even though the Master's presence here, I think, actually really works well. They mishandle it both in the scene I said earlier where they just sort of at the turn to camera moment, but also at the end. Now, even though Tom Baker is great in this, I think he has a lot of good lines, even his sort of super advanced dad joke, like, of this type's not really my forte, which is like, he just say that?
Did he just make the world's first type 40 pun?
I think he's good in it, but I think he makes a mistake in that scene where he's pulled into the Master's TARDIS because he underplays it.
Mm.
And he's kind of like, oh, of course, the Master. And he's kind of not really excited by it. The makeup's so clearly bad at that point. It's really the most underwhelming Doctor versus Master scene, I think, maybe in the whole canon. And it's a shame. He's kind of in there, and then the Master sort of freezes him, and they're playing freeze tag. And then the Doctor just kind of gets out of it by jumping through some paper. And it's like, well, wait a minute, was that the door to the TARDIS? Like, it's just so weird. And
there is a smashing of glass sound effect at that point,
which, so again, I give it a lot of points for all the stuff that happens, but then it sort of writes itself right at the end where the Master takes over Tremis. Mm. And then you're like, ooh, cool.
Yes. You know,
and then you're kind of left with that very sort of tragic line from Nyssa, like, where are you? And you're just And again, again, it's another indicator why you got to get Nyssa in this, because we care when she's hurt. She Sarah Sutton just has that innocent quality about her. It's very similar to like Willow and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, put her in danger. That will raise the stakes. That will create drama because we care about Nyssa. So, yeah, I think it's it ends up being a Dalek, even though it seems this close to being a hater or even a Cassandra at the end.
Well, I'm not. Well, am I being kind? I think I'm going to be terribly nice to to Keeper Trakan in my choice, in the sense that this is a hybrid for me. It's an unusual hybrid. It's not one we've had before. I'm not even sure it's possible as a hybrid, but I'm going to say it anyway. This has got to be one part Fixed Point in Time for me, because season 18, because, you know, I do remember exactly what you're talking about, at being a kid and being like so excited at that reveal at the end. And I remember that moment at Allison's birthday party, as discussed. And I wish I'd actually written my reaction to it down in the diary, because I just remember that was so cool. And all the kids were there and we were like, what? You know, and, you know, you were easily pleased in those days. But yeah, so it's soaked in nostalgia for me. But at the same time, I think we've got to say it looks really beautiful. I mean, they got the costumes directly from the BBC was doing a series of Shakespeare productions at this time. So that's why it looks so pretty. And the corridors look amazing. And you have these sort of slanted corridor things.
Yeah.
You know, very German expressionist kind of stuff. So it looks pretty as well. So I'm going to say that this is a fixed Cassandra in time.
I love it. Nice.
That feels
that's
right.
A very unusual hybrid. Wow. You're really going for these hybrids. You're like, you know, you keep upping the stakes on your hybrid ratings.
Yeah, but this particular hybrid is just exists on the Trakan Union, so you've probably never heard it. But you know, just you know, you can be a real hipster about it.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we have just rated the Keeper of Trakan. Hey, guys, now you get to rate the Keeper of Trakan. Go ahead into your Spotify app, pull up from the screen or wherever the poll feature is on your phone, and go ahead. Is it? I've got to start voting in our own polls. And tell us, is this a banger? Is it a Dalek, hater, Ogron, Fixed Point in Time, or Lady Cassandra? If you think it's a hybrid, why don't you go ahead and leave some notes in the Q&A feature?
Absolutely.
And we will talk about the results on a future podcast.
We will. And before we do that, it is time for us to run into our grandfather clock.
That's right. Oh no, but what's this? When I touch the face, is it our Substack? Is it pulltoopen.net? I'm frozen. I can't move until I sign up for full notes on every single Doctor Who story we talk about at pulltoopen.net. Yeah, that's right. Sign up there. You'll get a newsletter every Saturday. It has all our notes when we always have stuff that we don't get to. So there's fresh content there. And you can also, I think I said it earlier, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/pulltoopen. Don't forget the socials. We're at pulltoopen on TikTok and Blue Sky and pulltoopen 63 on pretty much everything else, X, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. And now, a new randomizer choice at last. We will go into our TARDIS and flee the Trakan Union and find out where we're going next.
Indeed. So, yes, please do follow us on all the socials, because Pull to Open is a keeper. You should keep us around. But we're not going to keep making terrible Keeper of Trakan puns. We're going to move on somewhere else using the two components. Pete has one. It's the Codex, the complete list of Doctor Who stories in sequential order. I have the other. It's the Executor, aka random.org. Which looks for the amount of evil in the atmosphere, interestingly, versus good, and counts the evil particles in the atmosphere, thus doing bespoke randomness and not the fake randomness of algorithms. So I plug in the minimum number one and the maximum number. Pete, what is the maximum number that we can now hit?
We are down to 189 stories we haven't done yet.
189. We've made the 180s before Doctor Who comes back. That's fabulous. Whether we'll stay in the 180s, we have yet to find out. But do we have a returning date, by the way, for the first season of Shooty?
Not a date, but a month. It's coming in May. So we got a couple months.
We got some time. We can get further into those 180s before the numbers starts rising again.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to make it to 170s, but we'll get to the low 180s.
We'll be in the 80s, appropriately enough, for this story that kicked off the 80s. Before we find out what the random story is, we like to issue some challenges to the randomizer, or requests or prayers to Melkor via the randomizer. Pete, what you got?
Well, you stole mine. I was going to say the 80s, but now that I feel like you've cursed it, I'm going to have to pick something else. And you know what I'm going to do? Because I was just praising Sarah Sutton and Nyssa, give us more Nyssa. There's a few more. There's a good chunk of season 19 we never have done. So, yeah, that'd be a good spot to go.
I mean, it's rare that I want to ask the randomizer for a specific story, but I will say it was either the first DVD set or the first VHS set that I bought of Doctor Who that was the sort of the loose master trilogy of Keeper, Legopolis, and Castrovalva.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say let's finish that trilogy. Let's stay in the 80s. Let's have more Nyssa. Let's go to Castrovalva.
That's really specific. You're a single number on the roulette wheel here. Like, I was going to be like all of 80s, which is a lot. And then I was like, well, narrowed it down to Nyssa. And now we're narrowing it down to a very specific story with Nyssa.
All the way. And if you don't want to do Castrovalva, just give us another story where it's a single word and the name of a place.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of single word stories. Yeah. Not many that are name of a place.
I don't know.
I guess the Time Lash is arguably a place.
Yeah, I don't know if there are any others, but we'll find out. We'll find out when we look through the codex. So, Pete, give me a countdown. I'll hit the generate button.
In 4, 3, 2, 1.
Whoa, Nelly.
161. It's recent.
It's definitely new Who. Here we go. We are at. Oh, baby. Last Christmas.
Oh, my goodness. It's time to get face hugged.
Interesting Clara choice here, given our discussion of the Clara splinter.
Mm-hmm.
She's, possible future for her. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not getting any connections here whatsoever, except that the randomizer wants to annoy us by not going anywhere near the 80s or Nyssa. But now maybe we've declared it canon that Clara is Nyssa's mother. Or Clara Splinter's Nyssa's mother. Maybe that's the connection. Last Christmas it is. Our second Christmassy episode in less than a year, and Dr. Widow Wardrobe we did, so we've done three of them via the randomizer, and it's so not seasonal this time.
Not seasonal, although there is still snow on the ground in a few places, so that could be what's going on here. And I'm looking forward to this one because it's that whole the Doctor meeting a fictional legendary figure thing, which
that's right
maybe be adjusted to taste depending on your day.
Meeting a figure with a beard, which may be the Tremus connection. And
there you go. Yeah, boom, done. Yeah.
The death of Tremus, the death of Danny Pink. There we go.
Okay, folks, this has been Pull to Open. It's a podcast. Podcasts are great things to follow, subscribe to, or become true companions of if you happen to be on YouTube. Just hit all the buttons you possibly can. There's another thing you can do on YouTube, by the way, which you haven't talked about much, which is a super thanks. And if you don't know what that is, go to YouTube and check it out. So if you're not a little on the fence about committing to be a full true companion of the podcast, a super thanks can sort of get you on the way. And we will thank you for that. We are obviously on all the podcast services, whether you're on Spotify, Amazon Music, Overcast, Apple, and even Google Podcasts, which is going away in a few weeks. You can still get us on all of that. And we are also on all the socials that I mentioned a few minutes ago. I just want to thank Martin West for his music as ever. And again, we will see you next time in a strange base.
And we'll be coming down the chimney. We'll be your elves on the rooftop. And we will definitely bring tangerines. So see you there.
Don't stop believing. Take care, guys.